to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch episode 63. Today we're going to be talking about season 6 episodes Dreamland Part 2 and How the Ghost Stole Christmas. I'm your host Sarah Blair and with me is Clara Cook. Hi Clara.
Hi Sarah.
We've got the second part of Dreamland we're going to talk about, and Dreamland 1 and 2 are probably in my top 5 favorite episodes of the whole series. How about you?
Actually, for me, Dreamland 1 and 2, they were in my top 5, but in recent years I've actually not enjoyed them as much as I used to, which I will go on to talk about as we go on. But I do still enjoy them. They are still pretty funny comic episodes. I think they suffer from where they fall in season 6. I think in the running order, I think that's a little bit of a problem. Not the episodes themselves being bad, but that they fall at an odd point during season 6. So
right, I definitely agree with that. And this Dreamland 2 actually aired in December 6, 1998, and it was written by Vince Gilligan, John Scheiben, and Frank Spotnitz, with Michael Watkins directing. So let's talk a little bit more about where they fall in the season, because coming after Triangle, which is one of the top episodes of the whole series, how do you think they fit into the whole rest of the series? Because you're right, they do come at a little bit of an odd spot.
I mean, Triangle is a brilliant episode. It's also quite comic as well. So these episodes do suffer a little bit because there's already a lot of comical episodes in season 6. So this two-parter feels a bit comedy heavy. I also think that Triangle is about Mulder being a fish out of water, and Dreamland 2 is also, and Dreamland 1 is also a story about Mulder being a fish out of water. And so I feel like we're getting the same motif again and again, plunging Mulder into a situation that he's not used to, that's not in a place where he shouldn't be. And so I think that maybe it would have been better, actually, I don't know, even better to try and do an episode where Scully is basically sent back in time or in a fish out of water situation. It just seems a little bit heavy on that sort of theme. And so I think I naturally compare these two episodes with Triangle, even though this is a two-parter, and I actually always prefer Triangle. So that's maybe one reason why I don't like these as much. I also think that this is a really good idea. The idea of body swapping is a really good idea. But does it need to be done over two episodes? I mean, I think it could have probably be done in one.
Yeah, let's talk about that just a little bit, how you feel about, because I'm interested to know how you feel like this episode stands up against the first. Because I know a lot of people say that they like the second episode a little bit better than the first.
I mean, I do actually like the second episode better than the first, but I think that both episodes have very important bits in them. So the first episode sets up the storyline, sort of sets up the initial characters, and the second episode resolves the situation. But in the middle, so there's even parts of this in the first episode and parts of it in the second episode. In the middle, there's this sort of period where people are sort of chasing back and forth, and there's not really a huge amount happening. Part of it is that there's a lot to do with Morris Fletcher's family. And although that's entertaining to a certain extent, to see Mulder try and cope with this very suburban family and this irritating wife, there's too much of it, really. And I feel that sort of slows the story down and slows the momentum of the story down. And then there's too much of Morris Fletcher being like a lech, you know, a lecherous man at the FBI. Like, we see quite a few scenes of that, and I think like one or two would have been fine. You
know what I mean? Michael McKean is so good at that, isn't he?
Yeah.
I love his character. I mean, even though he is a total lech, he does it so well that he just makes it, you know, really entertaining, I think. But I can understand what you mean by there's a little bit too much of it.
Everyone acts really well. Everybody's on point, you know. So I think David Duchovny does a really good job. He's got really good comic timing in the second episode, when he's being interviewed by the, you know, his Area 51 colleagues. He's got a very good comic timing, and Gillian Anderson is really good, and everybody acts really well. I mean, Morris Fletcher is just so smarmy, isn't he? You just love to hate him.
Yeah, he does a great job, and I think Nora Dunn, that plays his wife, did a really great job too.
Well, it's nice to see the lone gunman again, I think.
Yes.
And I actually thought it was really funny to see them eating Mexican food, and the idea that they have meals together.
We could have made you more
together.
Salsa.
Yeah, I like the idea that Byers eats Mexican food in his suit. I don't think I've ever seen Byers not in a suit. It's nice to see them, and it's nice to see how they react to Morris Fletcher looking like Mulder.
I like the moments when they see themselves in the mirror. They're very careful about placing those throughout the episode, and just to remind you, like, hey, this is what everybody else is seeing. Like, yeah. We're inside their heads, so this is what, you know.
Like when they're on the waterbed and Scully and, yes. Well, I say Scully, Morris Fletcher and Scully look up at the mirror, and it's Mulder and Scully lying on the bed together. Although it's actually Morris Fletcher, but the mirror obviously shows David Duchovny, yeah.
Yeah, and I love that moment in the bathroom when he goes to the sink and he glances back and sees himself in the mirror.
There's a really great theme in this two-parter, which is weird. It's almost like a body swap with another type of episode. It's like a reverse of what the normal theme in X-Files episodes is, which is that so many X-Files episodes, a mundane or rather uninspired person or character will be given something extraordinary. So I'm thinking of, like, for instance, like DPO or in Pusher, or I'm sure there's other examples as well, a situation where it's like, you know, a small town, it's a normal home, and yet something extraordinary has happened through some sort of paranormal means. In this case, it's an extraordinary situation, so it's like top secret military base, you know, it's Area 51, it's these men in black, these people who are working to a wider conspiracy, but Morris Fletcher is so mundane. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So it's an extraordinary situation with, like, when he gets Mulder's identity, he doesn't really do anything except cheat on his wife. Like, he's not really out to, do you know what I mean? He could, like, destroy the FBI from within, you know? He could, like, go out and do whatever he wants. He could, like, forge a whole new life and travel the world. But no, he just wants to basically have sex with other women. I mean, yeah. It's just so mundane, do you know what I mean? And he's such an unimaginative character, despite the fact that he's working in this very, what I'd imagine to be very imaginative type of job. And what I liked about it was the mole for Area 51 is, like, the captain, right? He's, like, the senior guy, the general. And the only reason he's actually being a mole is because he doesn't understand, like, what he's doing it for. Like, why am I part of this conspiracy? Like, do aliens really exist? I like the idea that the men in black don't even know what they're doing. Like, they don't know that aliens exist
exactly.
or not.
Exactly. And how I love the line where Morris says, I dreamed up Saddam Hussein on the toilet. Yeah, like, this, I love the idea. They're sort of middle management types that are just sort of winging it, and they act like they're so much bigger than they really are. You know, everybody thinks, oh, Area 51, government conspiracies, it's a really big secret thing, and they're just sort of hanging out in the desert, like, playing this power trip. And they don't even actually know if aliens really exist. That's hilarious to me. That's one of the reasons I really like this episode.
I thought the scene, like, probably should talk about the scene with Scully and Mulder at the end where he gives her the sunflower seeds. I thought that was really a really lovely scene. And in fact, actually, that's one of the most lovely scenes in the entire series, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Despite the fact that Mulder is technically in Morris Fletcher's body at the time. But I just think it's really lovely. It just shows how much they mean to each other, and how without Mulder, Scully won't, like, I mean, I guess it's echoed in the movie, isn't it? But well, actually, this is an echo of the movie. And I thought it was sweet that there's this really touching moment between the two of them with Morris Fletcher sitting there in the car.
Yeah. That's one of, when we did the five questions of X, that's the moment that I said was my favorite in the series, when she said, I'd kiss you if you weren't so damn ugly. I love that moment, that whole scene, like you said, it's really touching. And if you think about it, like, essentially they're just saying goodbye forever, because they assume at the moment that there's no way to fix this, and he's just going to be stuck in this body forever. And what is Scully going to do? She's not going to hang out with this Morris Fletcher guy. You know, they don't know that they're ever going to really see each other again or be able to be together. So, yeah, it's really kind of really an intense, touching moment. Obviously, it had to be resolved, so everything is going to get fixed. So you know when you're watching it, like, hey, this isn't going to last. But in that moment before they actually know that this time warp thing is rebounding and it's going to get fixed, like, what... what's going to happen? What are their plans? Because they never really talk about that.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of the problem for the episode for me is that I know that, like, we know that Mulder, I mean, I just knew, even when I watched it for the first time, I knew that Mulder wasn't going to get stuck in this guy's body forever, because the show would be over, you know. I guess this is the real comedy episode, so, you know it's all going to be solved at the end of it. But I think that's one of the reasons why I don't find it as, I don't know, as dramatic as I found watching other episodes. You're just figuring out how they're going to get there rather than if it's going to happen. There's no stakes, if you see what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, I was kind of concerned that things wouldn't go completely back to normal, so that people at the FBI would think Mulder was a lech.
Isn't it interesting, though, that the lechy Mulder is, like, going to be the superstar, and how Morris Fletcher thinks, like, he's going to take over this guy's life and make him this FBI superstar, because that's probably what he really wants to be. Like, he's this middle management guy way out, and nobody knows what he does, and nobody can know what he does. So now he's in this guy's body who's in the FBI, and he thinks he's gonna be some government superstar, and that's, like, his highest goal in life is to be, like, this government guy.
I think that actually happens in lots of episodes. You get the feeling that Mulder's intensely good-looking guy, you know, he's incredibly smart, he's talented, and there's people all around him who think he's basically cracked. He's a crackpot, you know, he hasn't lived up to his full potential. And that's what the opening teaser of Dreamland 2 is about, that, you know, it's Morris Fletcher saying his little sister went missing and then he lost his mind and, and pissed a brilliant career down the drain. I think is really hilarious. Yeah. I think it's hilarious that all these people look at Mulder and think, God, he could do so much more. That's the thing I like about Mulder, is he just doesn't care. You know, he's just, like, he's going to do his thing. He's going to be true to himself. He doesn't really give a crap whatever everyone else thinks, you know?
Yeah. So everybody thinks that he could be so much greater, and he wants to be so much less. Let's move on to How the Ghost Stole Christmas, because I think that really expands on their relationship and how their dynamic works. So let's talk about that episode. This episode came in December 13th, 1998, and it was written and directed by Chris Carter. And we have two special legendary guest stars, Lily Tomlin and Ed Asner. It was Mulder Scully and, you know, Lily Tomlin and Ed Asner. And that's the episode. So how do you think Mulder and Scully's relationship was brought to light by these two ghosts in this haunted house on Christmas Eve?
I think that this episode is really good. I really enjoy this episode, watching it again. I felt very much that Mulder and Scully's relationship is explored on different levels. So there is this exploration of the way they've been for a long time. So, for instance, Mulder going out and dragging Scully off with him, you know, wanting Scully to be with him and explore the paranormal mysteries in the world, and Scully kind of following behind him and always trying to prove him wrong. So I think that's something that was, it's been set up in earlier seasons, and it's something that at the very end of the episode they say, she's like, I don't always want to prove you wrong, and he's like, oh, you know, I'm sorry, that was pompous and egotistical of me, or whatever he says. But he is quite an egotistical person, and she is, I think, sometimes trying to prove him wrong, which isn't necessarily a need to prove him wrong, and they're just stuck in these modes of behaving. But it also explores the relationship as it's developed as well. So there's a very romantic aspect to this episode. So in the beginning, when Scully goes and sits in Mulder's car, and he tells her this story about the two lovers killing themselves on Christmas Eve, and basically the ghosts of the house, he tells it in a very romantic way. And when he talks about how handsome Maurice was and how sublime, you know, Lyda was, he's talking about him and Scully, I think. He's basically romancing her, you know? He's telling her a romantic
absolutely.
Story.
Absolutely. It's a great shipper moment. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think she knows it as well. Like, she's like, it's a very nice story, but it's a bit teenage boy of him. In fact, the whole episode, they act very juvenile. Mulder follows him, both of them scaring each other, Mulder cracking jokes and teasing her. And then later on when they're yelling at each other. So it's almost like they've digressed back to being, like, teenagers that fancy each other in a haunted house. So I don't know whether that was something that the writers were trying to parody, or whether it's just unintentional. I also feel that the ghost psychoanalyzing Mulder and Scully is a little bit like a nod to the fans online who are doing that as well. The fans are psychoanalyzing the characters on a regular basis, trying to guess what their relationships are and what they, you know, how they feel about each other. It sort of explores their relationship on different levels, I think. I think he's trying to get around the romance of it by showing that they might have a codependency with each other. So that's where he gets the one of the ghosts to say, you know, intimacy through codependency. Like, as in, is it romantic or do they need each other because they spend so much time with each other? Is it more about themselves, like more about Scully needing to prove someone wrong, more about Mulder needing somebody to be with him because he's lonely? Or is it that they actually do love each other? And I would argue that they love each other, but then, you know, I think Chris Pratt is trying to offer another alternative explanation, which is, it's still platonic. It's just that this is about them having those hang-ups in themselves and needing someone else to help them there.
And it's not necessarily a mutually exclusive thing. I mean, they could be codependent and romantic. It's not... Yeah. I don't think anybody who watches this show would say that Mulder and Scully have a completely healthy relationship. They're some messed up people. And they've got a lot going on, which is one of the reasons I love them, because they're not perfect. They do make a lot of mistakes, and that's why it makes it such a fun show to watch, really.
I do feel really sad that Mulder doesn't have anyone to spend Christmas with. That really, really makes
so
me sad.
Sad, yes. Poor Mulder. And how he sort of... I mean, you know, when Scully gets out of that car and she's looking at him in that moment, she's like, okay, tell me the story. Like, I'm going to indulge you because, like, in a way she feels sorry for him because she knows he's out here all alone in this cold night in the middle of December, and because he's got nowhere else to go and nobody else to spend time with. So she's going to indulge him as she always does. And yeah, they end up in this haunted house. And I love this episode because it's such a great ghost story. I don't know what it is about Christmas and ghosts, but the two really go well together, I think. I don't know if it's just from A Christmas Carol that we've got the ghosts who visit, you know, Scrooge or that kind of thing. But I love Christmas ghost stories. They seem extra special somehow.
I guess the idea that if you were going to haunt anybody at any point in the time, at any point in the year, aside from like Halloween, and at Halloween you probably want to scare somebody, but if you're going to haunt somebody at any time of the year, it would definitely be Christmas. That's when you go back to visit your loved ones, right? Like, as an apparition, I mean, apparition, sorry, that you'd definitely be there at Christmas. So it does make sense. I think this episode could have been scarier, and I think I would have liked it a bit better if it was scarier, so or more frightening. I think that the problem with that is that the music is a bit much. These sort of harpsichord type sound, like the ring, you know, that goes through the whole thing, and the sort of comical beat to the music ruins the atmosphere a little bit, and it prevents the episode from being as scary as it could be. I think the comedy is definitely great in the episode. One of my favourite moments in the episode, comedy-wise, is when Scully starts screaming that she's armed. Yeah. She's like, I'm armed, I'm armed! Which I thought was really hilarious. Yeah. Or when she's droning on and on and on about how ghosts don't exist, and Mulder's just completely ignoring her. And she goes this long spiel about how ghosts don't exist, and Mulder just doesn't even respond. Because you get the feeling that he's so used to her, completely and utterly being sceptical, that he just doesn't pay attention anymore.
It really shows off their dynamic, doesn't it? And I like the part towards the end where Scully was seeing Mulder as Mulder, but it was really Lyda the ghost and talking. So that was kind of an interesting dynamic to see the words from the ghost and how she imagined Mulder and Scully and trying to like pretend to be them and really like hit the home run and get them to kill each other.
There's a nice macabre kind of visual, isn't there, of Mulder and Scully dragging themselves across the bloody floor with blood everywhere to the music of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I mean, that's pretty dark, isn't it? You know,
it's so dark. Yeah,
it's great how the ghosts are just great, like psychoanalyzing Mulder. I just think the conversation between Maurice and Mulder is just really hilarious.
Yes.
Mulder's just like, what the hell is going on? And David Duchovny's face, you know, he just is very good acting. So when Maurice says, you know, oh, you're so lonely and all that kind of thing, and Mulder looks at him, and you can tell it's true. Mulder is lonely. You know, he is. And he knows it at that moment. But there's that moment where he looks a little bit shocked, like Maurice has actually pegged him. You know, he's lonely and he dragged Scully out here because he's lonely. And there's real pathos for the ghosts. Like, their biggest concerns are being taken out of the tourist guide, how they've aged, and they've got disillusioned with each other. Like, they've got disillusioned with the fact that they died for each other, which I think is really funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes them seem much more like real people rather than just like sort of scary ghosts, if you see what I'm saying.
So. Exactly. Yeah. And I love how their relationship sort of mirrors Mulder and Scully's too. You know, like, obviously, like, they've been in this quote-unquote relationship for ages, but they still argue in the way, like, Mulder and Scully sort of treat each other, and the ghosts are codependent. Like, Mulder and Scully are codependent, and that's an interesting dynamic, I thought, of this episode.
Yeah, and the ending of this episode is also got one of those scenes that I think is one of them, yeah, again, another one of the most charming scenes throughout the whole of the series, which is the idea of Mulder and Scully sitting on the sofa opening up Christmas presents that they promise not to buy each other on Christmas morning. That's just really sweet. It's really touching.
I love that moment and the look on Gillian Anderson's face when she just giggles, and you know she's so excited to get her present. And I always wonder what they gave each other.
Yeah.
Makes me nuts that you don't get to see it. I mean, like, not that you need to see it to get how special it is, because that's not really the point, but I always try to guess what they gave each other.
So what do you think they gave each other?
I don't know. This is the last time I watched it. I'm pretty sure she might have given him a porn tape because of the shape of the box. And I don't know, her shape is a cylinder. So
like a telescope or something? Or
maybe.
I'd like to think that they put a lot of thought into their gifts, but they could have just got each other something kind of jokey, and or like she bought him a film, you know, like an old horror movie or something.
Yeah, I bet it was a film. It looked like a videotape. It'd probably be, for Scully, I would guess something scientific, a petri dish or something. Well, I think that about sums it up for us. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys on Twitter at @X_cast, and let us know what you thought about today's episodes over at our Facebook group, The X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group. And Clara will be back tomorrow to discuss Terms of Endearment and the Ranking. So until then, trust no one.